For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It is May 22nd. We are in Rus, and we're in the middle of Perek Gimel, and tonight we're going to deal with the Geula that is spoken about here in Rus, literally the redemption. Now, before we read the Pesukim, let's review the halachos of real estate in Eretz Yisrael when there is a Beis HaMikdash, or actually this was before the Beis HaMikdash, but when we're living there according to the Torah. Those halachos were described primarily in Parshas Bahar 2 weeks ago, and a little bit more in Parshas Pechukosai last week. That's this time of year where it's discussed. So there are really three types of sales in Eretz Yisrael, three main types of sales. There's selling land, and remember, the whole system of the Torah is based on an agricultural society. The presumption is that you use land to grow things. So there's selling land. Then there's selling homes in a walled city, Batei Arichoma. And then there is selling homes outside of a walled city. And there's different halachas for all three of these types of real estate deals. So if you sell land, we're talking about your own land, Steh Achuza, that which you have, your family plot of land that you got all the way, going all the way back to the time that your family entered Eretz Yisrael under Yehoshua, and the land was given out, and you have some of that land. So if you sell it in Eretz Yisrael, so what are the rules for that sale? Is it a permanent sale?
In Yovel, it goes back.
Okay, it automatically goes back in Yovel, which means that the price of the sale is going to depend on what year of Yovel it is. So if you sell the land when you're in the fifth year of the cycle, so you're 45 years away from Yovel, then the price of the land is going to be pretty high. But if you sell the land after 40 years of the cycle, there's only 10 years left till Yovel, the price is going to go down. So that means that in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Torah, the way we treat real estate, it's really the opposite of in a secular society like in America. Over here, land is considered to be an investment. You buy land, and you hope that it appreciates. It goes up in value. In Eretz Yisrael, all land depreciates every year. It goes down in value. So you get to Yovel. When you get to Yovel, it goes back to the original owner.
Wait, sorry, what is Yovel?
Yovel is the 50th year.
Like Shemitah and
Yovel. So it's automatically the land has to depreciate. So if I buy land, the next year it's not worth as much as the year I bought it. And the next year it's worth less. And the next year it's worth less. The next year it's worth less. Every year it gets worth less and less. And then Yovel, I have to give it back to the original owner for free. So the price of real estate is never going to go skyrocketing in Eretz Yisrael, because it's not worth it. Also, no one is going to develop land, you know, build a hotel resort. No one's going to do that, because why would I do that? If I do that, then at Yovel it goes back to the owner, I lose it. So I'm not going to make any money on it. There's no point. The only reason for me to buy land is to use it now to make money. So right now I can grow crops. Right now I can make some use out of it. But there's no point in my doing something that I'm just going to give it back to the original owner after a few years. So the whole system is a completely different system than we're used to with real estate. But besides the fact that it goes back in Yovel, there's two other rules. So what's the halacha about buying it back? The original owner can buy it back. If I buy land from him, and I buy it back from him, and there's 30 years until Yovel. So the price is a price which is set for 30 years till Yovel. Let's say I buy it for $10,000 a year. So I buy it for $300,000. 30 years till Yovel. So I'm buying it for 30 years, $300,000. So he needs the money. That's why he sold it to me. So he goes and he spends the money. After 5 years, he comes into some money, and he has $250,000, which is the remaining amount. It's prorated. He bought it. He sold it to me for $300,000 for 30 years. Now there's 5 years later. So subtract $50,000. There's now the price of the land is $250,000. He can buy it back from me for $250,000, and I can't stop him. I have to give him back his land if he gives me $250,000. So it's completely his choice, and I'm stuck. I need to sell it back to him. That process is called Geula. He's redeeming the land. He's buying the land back prior to Yovel. Now, if he doesn't buy the land back, then at Yovel he gets it back automatically. But prior to Yovel, he could buy it back at a prorated cost. There's one limitation on that. What's the limitation? Anybody know?
Isn't his relative? I don't know if it's what you're talking about. His relative is supposed to get it back from us.
Okay, we'll get to the relatives in a moment. Good point. But first of all, there's a limitation about him buying it back. Can he buy it back right away?
No, he has to wait maybe a year.
Two. He has to wait 2 years. Minimum of 2 years he has to wait. So if he sells it to me with 30 years to go at $10,000 a year, so he can't buy it back until there are 28 years to go. Those first 2 years I for sure get it. So I am guaranteed 2 years of crops, which could be two harvests, it could be three harvests, depends how much I can cram into those 2 years. But I am guaranteed 2 years of crops before he's able to buy it back from me. But after 2 years are gone, he can buy it back and I cannot stop him. Now it's true that there's another halacha, which is that if he doesn't have money to buy it back, but he has a wealthy relative, then that relative has a mitzvah to buy it back. The relative has a mitzvah to buy it back. So I bought land from him for $300,000. 2 years have gone by. Now the land is worth $280,000. He doesn't have the money to buy it back, but he has a rich uncle. The uncle has $280,000 that he could buy it back. There's a mitzvah that it's not a chiyuv, it's not that he must, but there's a mitzvah that the uncle buys it back. Now, if the uncle buys it back, what happens to the land? Who has the land until Yovel?
The uncle.
The uncle buys it from me, and he keeps it until Yovel. What happens at Yovel?
Goes back to his nephew.
Goes back to him. It was his original land.
What does that do for the owner?
Right. Why would there be a mitzvah for his uncle to buy it back? It's not going to be his. It's going to be his uncle's for the next 28 years.
Right.
That's your question. What's your question?
Who's considered the original owner?
The person who inherited the land.
I'm talking about modern day.
There's no modern day. In Israel? They're not following the Torah.
Okay, so there is no modern. Okay.
Yeah, today there's nothing. Plus, we don't know. We wouldn't know anyway. Even if they wanted to follow the Torah, we don't know. We don't have the records.
So, do we know when Yovel is? Even
there is no. It's not that we don't know when Yovel is.
Do we know if it?
There's no Yovel because you only have Yovel. There's a machlokas, but certainly you need Rov Yisrael. You need most Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. Right. So machlokas is exactly what that means. Whether it's most of the Shvatim, most of each Shevet, most of the people, you need at least that. So it's not.
Okay.
So today there is no Yovel anyway.
We have Shemitah,
yes. Yeah. Now, so it's a good question, right? What good is it for the uncle to buy it back? It doesn't help the guy who sold it to me.
Gets the
mitzvah. Yeah, that's true for the uncle.
But for the owner.
What's it helping the owner? So you see from the Torah that the Torah is interested, and this is critical, the Torah is interested in the land remaining within the family. That's what you see. Meaning that all the rules are geared to keeping the land within the general family of the one who owns it. So
it's
this guy...
It's always in the family because it goes right back to him.
That's at Yovel.
Right, so technically never leaving the family.
Right. That it seems the Torah, the thrust of it is that the Torah would prefer land doesn't leave the family that
ever
owns it. Right. If you have to sell... Okay, fine. If you have to sell, the Rashi brings in Parshas Bahar that the Torah teaches Derech Eretz, you shouldn't sell land unless you absolutely have to. So good, he sells his land. He couldn't, he's poor, he has to sell the land. But then there's a mitzvah for the uncle, the cousin, to buy it back so that at least it stays within the family. L'charchila, it should stay within the family. You see that's what the Torah would prefer to happen. Now that's true with land the vast majority of land in Eretz Yisrael has that halacha. But it is diametrically opposed to the law of selling batei arichama, houses inside a walled city, meaning a city that was walled in the days of Yoshua ben Nun. Those houses have the exact opposite halacha. If I have a house in a walled city and I sell it to you, then the halacha is that I can buy it back for up to 1 year. There's no delay. I could buy it back from you the next day and you can't stop me. I could buy it back from you next month and you can't stop me. I could buy it back from you up till the anniversary of the day that you bought it from me. You have a year to buy it back for the same purchase price. You bought it from me for $300,000. I could buy it back from you for $300,000 and you can't stop me. Up to a year. Once the year is passed, it's yours. I don't get it back. Even when Yovel comes, I don't get it back. It's permanently yours until you sell it. It's yours. So inside of a walled city works almost exactly like real estate in America, except that you have up to a year to cancel the sale. Essentially, you can go back on the sale. It's like a delay. Every purchase, you've got a year to say, oh, you know what, I changed my mind. But up until that time, but after a year's over, it's the other person's. Belongs to the other person. So it's a fascinating thing that whether you're inside of a walled city or outside of a walled city, the rules of real estate are diametrically opposed to each other. It's an amazing thing. It means that, if you think about it, outside of a walled city, you can't have a situation in Eretz Yisrael where people become real estate tycoons, where they own vast amounts of land of Eretz Yisrael. In America, you have it. People who are very, very wealthy buy up a lot of real estate. You can't have that in Eretz Yisrael, because at Yovel, it's going to go back anyway. But inside a walled city, you could have it, even in Eretz Yisrael. Inside of a walled city, theoretically, a person could buy the whole city. If he has enough money, he could buy the whole city. More than that, the price of real estate inside of a walled city works the same way the prices of real estate work here, which means, how badly do you want it? If you want it really badly, you're going to pay more money for it. If you don't want it so badly, you're going to pay less money for it. The greater the amount of people who want it, the more it's going to cost. And it's going to depend on location, just like over here, where depending on where the house is, it's going to be worth more or less. But outside of walled city, the price of real estate is not going to follow the same rules, because since it's automatically going to go back to the original owner, so it can't, as I said before, it can't skyrocket, and it's going to go down each year, and it's primarily going to be for agriculture. People aren't going to build these, you know, massive developments to try to make money over many, many years, because they're not going to make money, because it's going to go back. So there's a completely different system inside of walled city, outside of walled city. Houses outside of a walled city have a combination of the two rules. Houses outside of a walled city have the same rules as land, in that after you can hold on to it until Yovel goes back to the original owner, and before Yovel, the original owner can buy it back, but there's no delay, meaning he can buy it back the day after he sells it. Unlike with land, it's like the houses in the walled city. He can buy it back right away, but it's not up to a year. He can just keep on buying it back until whatever, and Yovel gets it back anyway. So there's it. Yeah.
People can have land at all different shvatim.
You could.
Like,
you could buy it. You could buy it, but you're going to lose it, and Yovel's going to go back.
Then technically, they let it live there. Like, you could have someone from Reuven and.
Yeah, you could do that, but again, it wasn't generally to live in. It was usually
to work.
That's usually what it was for. People would buy land.
Does anyone not get an inheritance?
Gerim don't have.
So then they're just moving around all the time.
Yeah, Gerim have to rent. They have to rent or buy. Right, it's very difficult for them. Right. That's one of the reasons why the Torah presumes Gerim to be poor. All throughout the Torah says you got to take care of the Levi, the Ger, the Yasam, the Almana. Why? Because those
Levi's
people.
Poor.
What?
Levi's poor.
Levi were assumed to be poor.
The husband's a Kohen, so.
But they were assumed to be poor because they didn't have land.
Right.
They only had their own cities. Right. So,
get all your
food. Now the Levium's cities had other rules. That's in Parshas Bechukosai. The Levium's and the Kohanim cities had different rules because their the Torah does not allow their land to be taken away from them, even at Yovel. So anything sold by a Levi comes back to the Levi or to the Kohen, no matter what. That's protected for them. But it's still, they were presumed to be poor because they didn't have large amounts of land. Okay. Okay, now, think about it for a minute. If you are in an agricultural society, so you want land in order to work the land, in order to make crops, make food. That's what you want. So what's going to make the land more valuable or less valuable? Now, obviously, land that produces more food is going to be more valuable, more fertile, whatever it is, the better irrigated. Those things are going to make the land more valuable. But that's a general thing. That'll be more valuable to everyone. Everyone will like this piece of land better than that piece of land because this piece of land produces better crops, is better irrigated, is better, the soil is better. So that's universal. What would make you like one piece of land and me like a different piece of land? What other factors would there be besides how fertile it is and how irrigated it is, etc.? What would make you prefer this one and I would prefer that one?
Neighbors, location.
Okay, neighbors, location. Good. So you're saying neighbors because? Why don't you just explain, what do you mean by neighbors?
Like who's around you, which
so you're saying, I wouldn't want necessarily to be next to those people, and you like those people. I would prefer to be next to these people. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're saying, location,
that,
what do you mean?
Maybe proximity.
That's interesting, though. That's true. That would be another factor, proximity to the Beis HaMikdash. But that should be universal.
Right.
Right? But you could have it. You could have that proximity to the ocean, proximity to the river. It could be that you prefer the ocean, I prefer the river. You could have that. But there's another very, very important factor, which you have to put yourself in the mindset of a farmer. There is a factor which is really, really important. That is, well, that's true, but it's everybody, right? That's also everybody. But what would be more for you or for me? You want land that is contiguous, right? Which means that if I have land here, I already own land over here, I'm going to want any land adjacent to this land. Because when I'm plowing and I'm working the land, it's a lot easier to deal with a piece of land that's one piece rather than plow this piece of land, then take all my equipment and my donkey and whatever it is and go a few miles away and do another piece of land. Or if I want to protect my crops, I want to make sure that nobody steals my crops. Well, it's a lot easier to protect one area that's contiguous rather than have to watch these crops and then go over there and watch those crops. Or if I want to make sure my workers are working and they're not loafing around and taking breaks, so I'm going to go watch them. So if it's all in one area, oh, that's very easy for me. If I've got to go travel all over the place to all my different properties, it can take a lot of time. It's not as simple. So you want your land, if possible, to be contiguous. So that means that land next to my property is going to be more valuable to me than it is to you. Land next to your property is going to be more valuable to you than it is to me. So that's natural that the neighbors of the property are going to be more interested in the property than people who are not neighbors of that property. So that is a fluctuating factor. Okay? All right. Now.
Wait.
Yeah.
I figured people would just live on their own land, mm-hmm. have their own land.
They will, but if they want more, right? It's a way of making money.
Okay, sure.
If I have more land, I can make more money.
But then you have another house.
Yeah.
An empty house that you don't live in.
Right. Or it could be I live in the house a little bit one sometime of the year and then I go to that house.
I move around.
Beach house.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, in the Megillas Rus, all the process of buying back the land, whether it is the owner buying back the land, whether it is the uncle or the cousin buying back the land, it is called Geula. Geula, redemption. Redemption just means to exchange. Redemption here is to buy back the land. That's what it means. Okay. Now, in Megillas Rus, the first time Geula is mentioned is by Naomi. She mentions it at the end of the second parak.
at the very end of the second parak, when Rus comes back and she's carrying a huge amount of sheaves of barley that she collected at Boaz's field, way more than would be a normal for a poor person. So Naomi is astonished. So she asks her, "Where'd you do that? Where'd you get all this food?" And she says it was with Boaz. So Naomi knows who Boaz is. So Naomi says in Perek Beis Pasuk Chaf, "Vatomer Naomi lechalasa baruchu laHashem asher lo azav chasdo asachayim esameisim." He should be benched. Then Vatomer lo Naomi. Naomi said to her, "Karov lanu haish. He's a relative of ours. Mi goaleinu hu. He is from our redeemers." Okay. So it seems to be an interesting fact that doesn't really matter at this point. It just says he's one of our redeemers, which means that if we were to sell land, he is a relative of ours who would have a mitzvah to buy the land back. That's what she says. Then, if we skip down, after we talked about this last week, the whole episode of Rus going to Boaz in the middle of the night, and that whole business. But then, when Ruth says to Boaz, "Marry me," she somehow throws in this business of Geula. Look at Paragimel, Pasuk Tes. Vayomer mi'at. So Boaz is in the middle, and he can't see a thing, and he realizes that it's a woman, and he says to her, "Who are you?" Vatomer, she says, "Anochi Rus amasecha, I'm Rus, your maidservant. Ufarastach and afach al amascha, spread your cloak over your maidservant," which is another way of saying marry me, right? Take me under your wing. "Ki goel ata, for you are a redeemer." Now, what does one thing have to do with the other? That's the ultimate question. What? Marry me because you're a redeemer?
Well, it's also the
Yibum.
Okay, so there is something called Yibum in the Torah, but this is clearly not real Yibum. Yibum is when a man dies, God forbid, without any children, so his brother is a mitzvah to marry his wife. There's a mitzvah like that.
Isn't there something about Yibum here?
There is a conceptual Yibum going on over here, but it's not real Yibum. Machlon, who is Rus's husband, has no brothers who are alive.
Right.
He had a brother who died. So there is nobody to do real Yibum over here. But you're right, conceptually there's a Yibum going on over here. But still, she mentions that you are a Goel, that you're a Redeemer, doesn't seem to have any relevance to the story. So what? But the thing is, you can't say so what, because as we're about to see, this fact that Boaz is a Goel, and the word Geula is used over and over and over and over and over again from now into the fourth parak. Just keeps on going. Let's keep reading over here. Vayomer, so he said to her, "Brucha at laHashem biti, you're benched to Hashem, my daughter. Heitavd chasdecha acharon min harishon." We spoke about this last time, that your latter chesed is greater than your first chesed. Livil tilecha sacharei abachorim imdal b'mashir, you didn't go to the younger men. Then he says, "Ve'ata biti, now my daughter, al tiri, don't be afraid. Kol esher tomri esalach, whatever you say, I'll do for you. Ki yodea kol shan ami ki eshes chayol at, everybody knows, or all the great people know that you are an eshes chayol. Ve'ata ki amnam ki goel anochi, yes, it's true, I am a goel. V'gam yesh goel karov v'meni, but there is a closer goel than me. I, Boaz, am your cousin, or at least your husband's cousin. I'm your husband's cousin." Remember, Boaz is Elimelech's nephew. Boaz is Elimelech's nephew. So Elimelech's sons, Machlon and Kilion, are Boaz's cousins. So it's true, I am a Goel, I'm a cousin. However, there's someone closer to me. That means his uncle. There's a living uncle. Elimelech's brother, named Tov, is still alive. And he's a closer relative than me. He's an uncle, I'm only a cousin. Lini halayla, sleep tonight, meaning without a husband. V'hayav ha-boker will be in the morning, imi galeich Tov yigol. If Tov will redeem you, fine, he'll redeem you. And if he doesn't want to redeem you, then I will redeem you. Chai Hashem, I swear by Hashem. Shichti ad haboker, sleep until morning. Now, Boaz seems to now have substituted the word goel with the word marriage for the word goel. He's kind of like blurred the two things. She says, "Me marry because you're a goel." He says, "Well, there's a closer goel to me. Sleep tonight. If he's goel you, what do you mean goel you? goal your land. You? Your land? If he's goel you, fine. If not, I'll be goel you. Meaning, I'll marry you. What do you mean, I'll marry? What about goel? Are we talking about marriage or are we talking about the land? What are we talking about over here? Very confusing. There's something going on over here which is blurring, which is somehow bringing together marrying Ruth and being goel land. So it's confusing.
Why would Ruth have land?
And why would Ruth have land? That's an excellent question. Okay, that is the link to the whole story. How does Ruth have land? Ruth is a Gioras. She's a convert. What land? Okay, now the Navi itself answers that question. Sort of. Sort of answers that question. Rashi for sure answers the question, but he only answers what land we're talking about, but not how she gets it, which is a very, very important question. We're going to discuss that. Okay, so the rest of the parak goes that she's going to go back to her mother-in-law. And I just want to make sure we get these questions answered. So I'm going to be a little bit selective about what to read over here. Let's at least read to the end of the parak. So at least we've done that. Vatishkav Margalosav haboker. She slept at his feet until the morning. Vatalkam b'tem yakir ish esreyehu. She woke up before the time when a man can recognize his friend. Misha yakir, which is the earliest time of the morning, as you probably know, to say some of the brachos, etc. So for a man to put on talis and tefillin, that's the earliest time. So it's the time when a person can recognize his friend. It's just getting light. So she got up before that time. Why before that time? Vayomer, Boaz said, Al yivada, it should not be known, ki va'a ha'isha ha'garan, the woman came to the granary, it would look bad. People would think that there was something inappropriate going on over here, which there was not.
So why did she stay there?
Till morning?
Yeah, why didn't she just go?
That's a good question. It may have been too dangerous. It was the middle of the night, pitch black. It may have been too dangerous.
She left to come to the middle.
No, she came before nightfall, and then she waited till he went to sleep, and then she went over there. So you're right, it was nighttime, but she didn't come to the granary at night. She was already there and then came to him in the middle of the night. Vayomer, he said, Havi hamitpachas ha-shalayich, bring your your shawl, okay, that you have on you. Ve'achazi va, and hold it. Vatochez va, she held it. Vayamad shesh se'orim, and he measured out 6 barley. It doesn't say what things are barley, just 6 barley. Vayasha salveha, and he put it on her. Vayavohir, and he came to the city. The Gemara asks, what did he give her? Did he give her 6 bundles? That's way too heavy to carry. 6 big bundles of barley. Did he give her 6 barley sheaves? Well, what big, I mean, just 6 stalks of barley? That's nothing. So the Gemara says, yes, he gave her 6 things of barley. Why? Because he was giving her a remez. He was giving her a hint that she would have children who would have the brachos of v'nachal of ruach Hashem, ruach chachmah gvura, ruach etzavino, ruach das v'iras Hashem. That pasuk, which has ruach 6 times, that she would have 6 children, 6 descendants who would have those brachos. And the Gemara goes through who those 6 are. Rashi may bring it over there, but...
Rashi just says what the 6 things are.
He just says the ruach,
yeah,
thing. Okay, the children are David. Could be Shlomo. It's definitely Daniel. It's definitely Mashiach. And there are a few more. I don't remember all the... It's Gemara and Sanhedrin. I don't remember all the 6. So he was giving her a remez to that she was going to have the... She was ultimately going to be the mother of Mashiach. He knows that she's going to be the mother of Mashiach. He doesn't know who the father's going to be. It might be Tov, it might be him. But he knows that she's the Ima Shel Malchus. She's going to be the mother of Mashiach and David. Vatovo El Chamosa, she comes to her mother-in-law. Vatomer Mi'at Biti. So Naomi says to her, who are you, my daughter? Now what kind of question is that? First of all, did Naomi forget who she was? Second of all, she calls her my daughter. So obviously she doesn't mean... What's your name?
She means who picked you,
or
who's going to marry you,
or who? Right. What
happened?
Have you become? Are you a new? Identify yourself.
Right.
Right. Vatagelah es kol hashoras ala ha'ish. So Ruth told her everything that Boaz did, meaning that they did not get married. She's still single, but Boaz is now going to deal with it. Vatomer, and then she said, Ruth says, he gave me these 6 barley sheaves. Ki amare life, where he said to me, "Al tavoi rekam, don't come empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Which means, your mother-in-law engineered this whole thing, that you should become the mother of David HaMelech, the mother of Mashiach. So I don't want you going back to her empty-handed as if her whole orchestration didn't do anything. I want her to get the message. Yes, she's been successful. You, Rus, are going to be the mother of Mashiach. I want your mother-in-law to get that message. I want my cousin Nami to get that message. But it's not over yet, because we don't know who the father is going to be. Vatomer, so then Nami says, Shviviti, sit my daughter, Adashat Tiedin Echi Poldovar, so you know how the thing falls. Ki lo yishko ta'ish, for the man will not rest, Ki'im kila hadavar hayom, until the thing is finished today. Which the simple meaning is, she's saying to her, that I know Boaz is not going to just drag his feet on this thing. If he said he's going to take care of it, he's going to take care of it. Boaz doesn't waste time. He said he's going to do it, sit tight. He's going to do it.
Why isn't there like a supposed for the father of Mashiach?
What then?
Why is like the father of Mashiach not important?
No, it is important. This is where it's going to be determined right now. That's going to be the next parak. Why the uncle rejects it and Boaz takes it, it's significant. We're going to get to that. But not tonight. Now, the deeper meaning of this pasuk is that Naomi, again, the visionary, Naomi says to Rus, sit tight, don't worry, the man will not rest, which means Boaz will not die until he takes care of this thing today. After that, he's going to die. But don't worry about it. He'll hold on until this is taken care of today. Okay. Now,
was Boaz sick?
No, he was not sick.
Not that we know of.
It does not appear that he was sick. Now, then, we're going to have this whole episode of Boaz coming to the city, and he's going to convene a Beis Din, and he's going to offer the Geula to his uncle Tov. Now, I want to read just a few psukim over here. Oh, we're really, it's going to be so difficult to do. There's so much to talk about here. Okay. All right, let me pause over here and let's set it up before we read the psukim. So the most significant question of the whole thing is, what land are we talking about? Okay. Rus can't own land. She's a Gioris. She's a convert. Converts don't own land. Fine. So, what about Naomi? Does Naomi have land? So, let me just see if there's anything over here. Does Naomi have land?
But who got Elimelech's land?
Okay. Who got Elimelech's land? Now you got to follow this carefully. This is going to go through the halakos of Yerusha, of inheritance.
Yeah, but if she's a Gioris, would she get it?
Okay, listen carefully. Elimelech had land. Now, Elimelech has three brothers. Two of them are dead. He has three brothers. One brother is Naomi's father, his wife's father. He was a brother, but he's passed away.
So he married his cousin.
His niece. Yeah. He married his niece. Right. So Elimelech's brother was Naomi's father. Another brother was Boaz's father. Boaz's father was another brother. So Boaz and Naomi are first cousins, and they're both a nephew and niece of Elimelech. Then there is a third brother, there's four altogether, and that is Tov, Boaz's uncle. Okay, so there's four brothers. Those brothers are the sons of Nachshon ben Aminadav, the one who jumped into the Yamsuf, Nachshon ben Aminadav. Fine. Those sons all have land in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So Boaz's father dies. Who gets his land?
Boaz.
Boaz has his land. Okay. Naomi's father dies. Now, we assume he had no sons. So who has his land? Naomi. Naomi has his land. So Naomi has her father's land, and Boaz has his father's land, and of course Tov has his own land. What happened to Elimelech's land? So he died. So when he died, who inherited him?
His sons,
Machlon and Kilion. They inherited his land. Fine. They died. They don't have any sons. They don't have any daughters. Who inherits their land?
Brother.
Well,
no, the brother.
Do their wives inherit?
No.
Why not?
They don't specify that whole thing.
Okay. Wives never inherit husbands, according to the Torah. There's no such thing.
So
husbands inherit wives. Wives do not inherit husbands. Unless you write a will,
wives do not inherit husbands. There is a chiyuv that the estate takes care of the wife. That's what a ksuba is. And an estate has to pay for her to live, but she does not inherit her husband. So, Machlon and Kilian die. They have no sons, they have no daughters. The next person in line, if there are no sons and daughters, is? Before that, is their father, Elimelech. But he's also dead. The next person in line would be their brothers. They don't have any brothers. So who's next? First thing is sons, then comes daughters, then comes father, then comes father's sons, their brothers. They're dead. All these people are dead. So who's next? Next is the grandfather. It goes back to Nachshon Ben Aminadab. He's also dead.
But then he goes down.
So who's next? Nachshon Ben Aminadab's sons. Besides Elimelech, who died, there's three other sons. One is Tov, one is Boaz's father, one is Naomi's father.
So split it?
Yes, Tov gets a third. Boaz's father gets a third, but he's dead, so it goes to Boaz. And Naomi's father gets a third. He's also dead, so it goes to Naomi. So there's...
But Ruth still doesn't have land.
No, Ruth doesn't have land. But Elimelech's land was split three ways. Between Tov, Boaz, and Naomi. They have land. They have Elimelech's land.
That's how his wife gets it, because usually... That's how his wife ended up getting it.
That's right. Machlon and Kilion's land, Rus's husband Machlon, his land, which is part of this land that we're talking about, ended up with Machlon's mother. A third of it, anyway, ended up with Machlon's mother. Not because Machlon's mother inherited Machlon, but because the way it all worked going backwards, it ended up in Machlon. At least a third of it ended up at Naomi's door. So Naomi, just because she was related, ended up with a third of each of her son's property. A third went to her cousin Boaz, and a third went to her uncle Tov. That's the land we're talking about. Now, let's go back to the system. What's the system? If I sell land in Eretz Israel, so then what happens next? If I have money, I can't do anything for 2 years. If I have money to buy it back after 2 years, I got to buy it back. If I don't have money to buy it back after 2 years, what's the halacha? Before you, besides that, there's a mitzvah for my uncle or my cousin, my uncle or my cousin, to buy back the land. Now, what's the reason for that? We said because the Torah would prefer that the land stay within the family, right? I want to sell my land. Who should I go to first to buy the land?
Your family.
I should go to my family. Because I may as well skip the middleman. If I have to sell land, and I'm going to go to Shmeri uncle, so he is then going to have to sell the land to my rich uncle. If I have a rich uncle, why should I go to somebody who's not related to me? I may as well skip the middleman. I may as well go directly to my uncle. The system developed in Eretz Yisrael that when people needed to sell land, the first thing they would do is go to their relatives. For two reasons. First of all, obviously the Torah wants the land to stay within the family. Second of all, if you are a rich relative, you're going to have a mitzvah to buy it back anyway. So let's skip the middleman, just buy it from me.
Do they still have the mitzvah?
Yes. So let's do that. So therefore, the default was that you went to your rich relatives first, if you had rich relatives. Naomi and Ruth have a third of Naomi's late husband's land. Of a third of Machlon's Ruth's late husband's land. Naomi owns a third of that land. Naomi needs to sell it because they don't have any money. So she says, I'm going to sell it first to my relatives. There's my cousin Boaz, there's my uncle Tov. But I am making a condition. Whoever buys the land has to marry Rus. I'm making it conditional. If they would have already sold the land to somebody else, and now the uncle or the cousin is going to buy it back, you can't make any conditions. It's sold already. You can't make a condition after you sell the land. But they haven't sold the land yet. Naomi is ready to sell the land, and she says,
I'm selling land, but I'm putting a condition on it. If you don't like the condition, don't buy it. But I'm making a condition. The condition is you got to marry Rus. If you want the land, you got to marry Rus. Why?
What's that?
That's mean, though.
Wait, why? Why does she want to do that? Why would Nami put this condition on taking the land? So the Navi tells us. The Navi tells us why. You know why?
Look in Perek Daled. I know this is ahead of where we're up to. After the whole deal is done, and Boaz marries Rus. Well, actually, we're going to read two different places. First, Boaz says to the Goel, I'm reading in Pasuk Hey, Perek Daled Pasuk Hey. Vayomer Boaz, Biyom Knoscha Sadem Ya Nami, when you buy this field from Nami, from Nami, Umeis Rus HaMoavia Eish HaMeis Kanisa, you also have to marry Rus, the wife of the dead person. Lihakim Shem HaMeis Al Nachaloso, to establish the name of the dead person on his inheritance. Rashi explains that this is where the Yibum comes in. How does Yibum work? Yibum works like this. A man died. He had no children. God forbid. So what happens? There's a mitzvah for his brother to marry his widow. So the brother marries the widow. They have a child. That child inherits the money, the land of his father. That first child... Right, of his mother's deceased husband. Right, he becomes
Sorry, the one who does Yibum inherits. That's wrong. The one who does Yibum inherits the land.
The brother.
Yeah. But the point of it is, in order to establish the name of the brother, that's the reason. For it. The reason for it is that the person who died without any children, so he has no continuity, there should be someone to carry on his name. That's the purpose of it. That's why you have Yibum. If you recall, that's why it was such a big avera what Aaron Onan did. Onan didn't want to do Yibum because he knew that the first child would be called on Er's name, and he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to have a child for Er. That was his avera. So here it's a similar idea, but it's not Mamash Yibum, but it's a similar idea. What was going to happen over here? Rashi explains. Machlon is dead, but Machlon owned land. Machlon also had a wife, who's now a widow. If Boaz, or anybody, marries Rus, and also redeems the land, that means that when Rus walks out on that land, people will remember Machlon. People, Rashi says, people will say, Zu Eshes Machlon. This is the wife of Machlon. When you put together the deceased land with the deceased widow, then people will remember, oh yeah, that was Machlon's wife. Yeah, that was Machlon's land. They'll remember Machlon. This was an act of chesed on Boaz's part, that to marry Rus and redeem the land, this is what Nami wanted. She wanted to keep the two together so that Machlon's name wouldn't be lost. That's why it says over here, Lakim Shema Masa Nachala. So look a little further in Perek Daled. After Boaz buys the land, he says, Pasuk Tes, verse 9, Vayomer Boaz Lazakeinim B'cholam, Eidim Atem Ayom, you are witnesses. Ki Kanisias Kol Asher Le'Elimelech, I have purchased all that Elimelech and Machlon and Kilion had from Nami. Meaning, I didn't get everything they had from Nami. Whatever Nami had of theirs, I'm getting. I bought. That's what he means. Because Nami only had a third of what they had. And Boaz says, I bought it all from her. Also, Rus, the wife of Machlon, Konisi Lili Ishai, also married her. Why? Hakim Shem HaMeis on Nachalaso, to establish the name of the Meis on his inheritance, V'lo'ikareis Shem HaMeis mi'imechav, so that the name of the Meis should not be cut off from his brothers, U'mishar Mekomo, Eidim Atem Hayom. Boaz does what Onan didn't want to do. Boaz is also from Yehuda. He's from Peretz. Aaron Onan were not Zoche. They could have been the ancestors of Mashiach. They weren't. because they did an avera. They were killed by Hashem. Boaz does what Onan was not willing to do. He marries and buys land only so that there should be a remembrance for Mahlon. He's willing to take a secondary role. Mahlon will be remembered, not me. Can you imagine a man marries a woman in order that people should say, oh yeah, that was Mahlon's wife? You think about that. A man marries a woman who was married before and her husband died. And a man marries her not so people will say she's my wife, it's so people will say, oh yeah, she was the wife of that person who passed away. Think about that. Does that fit with a normal ego of a man? Right? He's marrying her so people will remember the other man. It's an amazing chesed that Boaz is doing over here. But that was the purpose. Now if you think about it, it's even more astonishing than that. Because when Machlon left, when Machlon left Eretz Yisrael, did he own the land?
No.
No. He inherited the land when his father died in Moab. Did anybody in Eretz Yisrael ever see Machlon on this land?
No.
Machlon got married in Moab to Rus. Did anybody ever see Machlon and Rus married? Anybody in Eretz Yisrael? No. So here you have land that was owned by Machlon. No one ever saw Machlon here on this land, at least not as an owner. And you have a woman who is his almana, who no one ever saw as his wife, and yet, by putting the land together with her, people are going to wonder, what is she doing here? Oh yeah, that was that woman that he married. It's Machlon. It's in order to remember Machlon. That's what's happening over here with the geula of the land and the marriage of Rus. That's what's happening. In order to produce Mashiach, the chesed of Boaz of marrying a woman in order to bring out somebody else's name, which is a kapara, which is a tikkun for what Onan didn't do, that has to happen over here. And that produces David HaMelech, though, as we've been mentioning the entire time, the whole sefer, the whole Megillah of Rus is chesed. From the whole thing, that's all it's about. The chesed of Boaz, the chesed of Rus coming together to create David HaMelech and Mashiach. And here you have another example of it. Who's the ultimate Goel? Redeemer?
Mashiach.
Uval Tzion Goel. It's Mashiach. Mashiach is a Goel. He's a Redeemer. He's redeeming who? Who is Mashiach going to redeem?
Everyone.
More specifically? Uval Tzion Goel. Us. He's going to redeem us to get us out of Golos. That's what he's going to do. For who? For HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Mashiach is going to be a Goel. Not for his own name, not to say, oh, look what I did. He's going to be a Goel for the sake of the of a Kiddush Hashem, of being Marbek Kvod Shamayim. That's why he's doing it. The Goel has to be doing it altruistically, just like over here, that he's doing it altruistically. And one last thing I'll leave you with is that if you turn back to Parshas Bahar, where this whole thing of Geula is discussed, this Rabbi Avram Horvitz in Dunwoody, I gave this share in Dunwoody, and he told me this afterwards. That's who I heard it from most recently. But if you look at where it talks about the Geula, it's on page 704. Now here it's not talking about Geula of land, it's talking about Geula of a person who has to sell himself. So it says in Pasuk Mem Ches, Acharenim kar geula tielo, after he's sold, there'll be a geula for him. Echad me'achav yigalenu, one of his brothers will redeem him. O dodo, o ven dodo yigalenu. Either his uncle or his uncle's son, meaning his cousin, will redeem him. So we have an uncle over here, that would be Tov, and we have a ben dod, that would be Boaz. Look at the word dodo. What are the letters of Dodo and Ben Dodo? Right. David. Interesting? Okay. Here's Hashem. Next time, what we will try, there's still a lot to talk about. We're going to do Perek Daleh next time in a little more detail. And there's a lot to, I don't know how much, hopefully we'll finish. There's a lot more to cover. Here's Hashem. Next week, we'll try to finish it. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta,
reach out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.